So my talk is on evaluating the academic impact of a visual correction in children in a large urban setting. It's somewhat of a unique type of topic. Many of us have been very involved with school-based vision programs, and this is the first time we're looking at the academic impact of what we're doing. I want to acknowledge my co-authors, which include Melissa Succo and Dr. Valerie Conrad, plus the multitude of students that have rotated through my clinic and the other faculty that have participated as well. And we have no relationships to disclose. So many of you are probably familiar with the program, but for those of you who are not, I want to give a little background information. The Illinois Eye Institute at Princeton is a collaboration of the Chicago Public School System, which we refer to as CPS, and the Illinois College of Optometry, which is an optometry school that's about 2 miles south of here. The program IEI at Princeton opened in January of 2011, and it's basically designed to serve Chicago Public School students, but the reality is we serve anybody who walks in our door, anybody that lives in the Chicago area or has indicated that they have a lack of access to eye care services. The school that we're at is about 8 minutes south of the college in the Englewood neighborhood, right off the Dan Ryan and 51st. And it is in a very low-income neighborhood. It serves primarily children who are Black or Hispanic currently. So the program that we set up was a kindergarten center that we converted to an eye clinic where 4 kindergarten rooms were divided up into 13 examination lanes, the same type of lanes that you would find in any optometric or ophthalmological office. We provide basic primary comprehensive eye exams along with some secondary level of care, vision therapy, visual information processing, medically necessary contact lenses, OCTs, which is important for scanning for glaucoma, fundus photos, and Visigraph, which is basically eye movement testing. Every third year student from ICO, except 2 or 3, rotate through our clinic for 1 morning a week for 11 weeks. And we also have fourth year students that rotate through. This spring, we started a new program where we now have externs, where an extern spends 11 weeks with us 5 days a week. And those have been currently from the college here in Chicago. And in January, we are including some of the other optometry schools. Our first one's going to be from the University of Houston College of Optometry. CPS schools are invited to choose a date to bring their students to the Illinois Eye Institute at Princeton. The reality is that currently I am assigned 200 of the schools because they've expanded to some additional programming, but when we opened up, there were no other programs other than our brick and mortar building. Right now we have it set up so when a school is scheduled, a bus comes and up to 45 children can be brought on that bus. We are also open for walk-ins every morning between 8:30 and 9:30. The reality is if someone showed up late, we rarely turn them away. But it's much easier in an environment where you kind of control the numbers of people who come in and out. The children who arrive with the school will also have their glasses delivered back to the school, so there really is only one visit involved. The question for the purposes of my talk this afternoon is, does coming to the Illinois at Eye Institute Princeton Vision Clinic for a comprehensive primary eye exam have any effect on a child's academic performance? We talk as eye care providers about, oh yes, you have to have glasses because if you can't see, you can't learn. But the evidence has been really weak up until this point in time. We partnered with an organization from the University of Chicago called the Consortium on Chicago Student Research. The reason this organization was the important organization for us to work with is because the Chicago Public School System has a memorandum of understanding with CCSR where they have a data sharing agreement. All student data is accessible to CCSR currently. And that would include standardized tests along with a multitude of other pieces of information. The Illinois at Eye Institute at Princeton contracted with CCSR. We got a large fund to support the study. And for them to analyze the impact of any of the kids that have attended the IEI at Princeton on academic performance. What we did is we matched our vision data with their academic data with a unique identifier. Every child within the Chicago Public School System is given a student ID. And what occurs with the data, the vision data, is we put it in an Excel sheet. That Excel sheet goes to the Chicago Public School System. They pair it with the student ID, and that information sort of gets de-identified and sent over to CCSR, and all the data is matched based on the student identification number. We decided to use our first 3 years of data from January of 2011 to December of 2013. There were 14,929 children seen during that period of time for basic eye care. The age range of that group was anybody from birth through high school graduation. Now, you know, I just said age range and I said high school graduation. The reason is some children within the Chicago Public School System can age out at the age of 22 if they have special needs, if they've had some truancy, juvenile delinquency, behavioral issues, and are in alternative programs. So the age level is somewhat of an unusual endpoint. Of those that we saw, 14,663 were actually enrolled in the Chicago Public School System, and the students that we did see that were referred by CPS were primarily referred through the schools by failing a vision screening, by teacher's referral, by lost glasses, or a parent request. Now, part of the teacher referral oftentimes would include those children who were being evaluated for special education set up for an individual education plan. CPS does a phenomenal job in hearing and vision screenings. They do it at kindergarten, third grade, and eighth grade. But the reality is the state of Illinois has a mandatory eye exam law for any child entering the school system. The problem is the Chicago Public School System has had a little difficulty, and their compliance with that law is about 9% during the time period that we're talking. It has increased substantially since we started to see some of their younger kids. The demographics of the kids that we saw and the kids of the schools that sent the children, as well as the Chicago Public School System, are listed here. So I just want to point out a few things. So if you look all the way over to the right-hand side, you'll see the CPS programs. 41.4% of the students attending the school systems are Black or African American. 44.7% are Latino or Hispanic. Now the rest are Asian, mixed, Caucasian. There are 50.3% males, and only 12.6 of the whole city is special education or identified as having an IEP. Currently, at the period of time we were looking at, they were still using free and reduced lunches, which they don't do anymore because every student in the Chicago Public School System now gets a free lunch. But at the time, 83.5% of the Chicago Public School students received free and reduced lunch. That is going to be our surrogate for low income. Now, what I want you to notice is the sending schools is very different from what this whole district is. And even more so, I want you to look at the first column, which is our clinic patients. 60.6% of our patients were Black or African American. 35.4% were Latino or Hispanic. That accounted for 96% of the patients we saw at our clinic. Less than 50% were male, and 94% of our children were on free and reduced lunches. So, and the last piece that I think is even more telling is 21% of the children that we saw were identified as receiving special education services. Now, we're not talking 504s, we're talking being identified as a special education student. So the 3 points that I wanted to point out with that table is that the population we see is more likely Black than overall CPS students. It is more likely impoverished than the rest of the CPS system. And it's more likely identified as special education, making our population very different than the population at large. Our outcomes of interest were standardized reading scores, standardized math scores, and grade point average, what we always refer to as GPA. The students that we used in our study needed to have at least one of these three outcomes, both before they visited the clinic as well as after they visited the clinic, in order to be included in the analysis. The challenge is that children less than third grade do not have standardized test scores before they arrive, so our data could not be analyzed for those younger children. And we use things like the ISATs for the students, which has changed a bit in the state of Illinois. You know, testing is a big issue in most of the public school system, and we use ACT scores for our juniors. The GPA is reflected as a standardized. You know, it's always challenging as you wonder if the GPA between one school and the next will be the same. So our statisticians really worked around that and found that standardizing within each grade and year so that the district overall has a level of zero in the middle and a standard deviation of one. And the point estimates from the models can be interpreted as growth relative to other students. So if it's positive, that means they did better. If it's negative, that means they did worse. A one standard deviation unit is considered equivalent to, on a 4-point scale, as a grade difference from an A to a B or a B to a C, just to give you some sense. So this is our pretreatment academic indicators. You have attendance, which we originally were going to look at, and we dropped because the statistician said the data really did not reflect quality information. So then we looked at the GPA, the math, and the reading outcomes. As you'll notice, the grade point average for CPS students was much higher, 2.58, than our students at 2.42, and the CPS students had much better academic performance both in math and reading, whereas the clinic and the sending schools were both below zero, suggesting that the schools we were working with academically were performing poor, and the kids that actually made it to our clinic were even on a lower scale. So that gives you some insight as to the population we serve. What we wanted to bring out is a couple of points. Approximately 50% of the students presented to our clinic actually reported they had glasses. Unfortunately, 86% of those who said they had glasses in the past came in without them. Now, I'm sure nobody in this room is surprised at that data. The other things we did is when we looked at visual acuity, we looked at entering visual acuity, which would be with their glasses if they had them, without their glasses if they didn't. And interestingly enough, 35% of our children actually fail visual acuity, having visual acuities poorer than 20/40. The vision data that we used that we felt was important to look at included best corrected acuity using a LogMAR scale to ensure we were using the optimum visual acuity outcomes. We also did a dry autorefraction because we wanted to make sure there was some reliability in the technology that we were using. So those children who we could not dilate, we could only get a dry autorefraction on. But majority of our patients were dilated and cycloplegic with 1% trophicomide, 2.5% phenylephrine, and 2 drops of 1% cyclopentolate. We were very mean. So the kids, what autorefractions were really our standard of care to identify the true refractive error. In some of our other studies that you're going to hear about at some other point, we also looked at the magnitude of refractive error, nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism. So this is it. This is the big piece. I want you to look at the information in the top line specifically related, identified as special effect. When we looked at standardized reading tests for the population as a whole, we found absolutely no difference. You see the p-value showed no significant difference between any of our groups. When we looked at the math scores, we saw an improvement after they came to the clinic of 0.025 with a p-value less than 0.001. There is no doubt about the fact that there was an improvement in math scores when you looked at the population as a whole. GPA, we also found a little bit of an improvement as well, and the significance was excellent, maybe not quite as good as math. The challenge is, and our statisticians kept reminding of us this piece, is the trend in the year following the visit. The concern is, can we maintain that improvement in academic performance, or do we lose it the year after? So, as you'll see here, each of these shows a negative effect, so that much of the impact of the positive that we found in the first year after being seen at the eye clinic was lost the second and the third year. And I'm going to show you some graphs that will reinforce that. I want you to also notice that our population RN varied depending on which category, because we had to ensure, in order to be utilized in the analysis, that we had both the pre-testing and the post-testing information. So it's 12,600 kids in the reading and math scores and 13,000 in the GPA. Here is the example of the first effect of reading scores, and you'll notice that we look at the effect 2 years before the actual event, 1 year before they came in, zero is the actual time of the exam, and 1 year is the point in time after the effect. You'll see reading performance did not improve the year after and actually dropped the year after that. Math scores, this is the exciting one. This is one you can take and say, you know, there is a benefit to getting an eye exam. So performance before they came in for their eye exam was pretty much stable. Here's the point in time where they came for their eye exam. Here's their math scores after we saw them. We see a significant improvement in standardized math tests. And then what the sad part is we've lost it that next year out. And here's GPA, very much the same. So the conclusions we have is that students who come for an eye exam at the Illinois Eye Institute at Princeton make a small but significant improvement in math scores. The challenge is they fade over time. Reading and GPAs do fall apart when we start to break it down a little bit, but our initial outcome shows that GPA was beneficial. There are lots of limitations in this study. One of the biggest ones is there's no mechanism to ensure that if we give them glasses that they actually wear them. I've thought that, number one, we could use super glue. It doesn't work very well. Parents aren't too happy with it. But the other thing is there was one study that was done at the University of Houston which had a sensor in the arm of the temple to be able to record when the glasses were on the body. So it showed sort of a body temperature issue, and you could kind of record that information. The other piece is our population is very select. It's primarily low income, it's more special education, it's a very unique population. So we have to be cautious about extrapolating this information. We have lots of ideas of where we're gonna go, and I've actually presented in another meeting the benefits for a specific subpopulation. The Hispanic population shows reading improvements as well as GPA improvements when you look at them as a subpopulation. But we know that we need to look more closely. There was some suggestion that there were differences in age, that the high school students might actually have improved a little bit more, but when you aggregate the data, it sort of washes out some of those big changes. We want to look at the effect of refractive error. Do high astigmats or high hyperopes maybe show more of an improvement? And that's one of the things we think is an important question. We want to look, is there a difference in visual acuity? Many times those individuals who are nearsighted come in and just get their lenses tweaked. I, as a clinician, would not expect much of an improvement in academic performance because, number one, they've seen pretty well before, but also myopes do pretty well up close without a full correction. And then the big issue is wearing schedule compliance. We've talked about some sort of a way of incentivizing the kids or the teachers in the classroom to ensure or monitor that the kids are wearing their glasses. So those are some of the things that we want to look at in the future. And this is a good start. It shows that there is value to an eye exam in children. So all of the work that's being done in school health programs that's really focusing on children and they're getting from the screening to the exam is definitely worthwhile. Thank you very much. Thank you.